Encourage courage.
Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, a year ago, Hurricane Maria struck the island of Puerto Rico. At least 3,000 people were killed by the hurricane and its aftermath, although President Trump denies the death toll is that high. We're going to speak with one of Puerto Rico's shadow representatives in Congress in just a moment. But first, five listener comments about yesterday's program, in which we discussed the Kavanaugh nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court and the allegations of sexual abuse against him.
Thanks for the show. Really great following the whole Kavanaugh thing. I'm calling because I like to say that the repressed memories thing, that's a real thing. I know you had someone on the show today who called it and gave a secondhand account, but I'm going to give you a firsthand account. I was raped at 10 years old by a 40-year-old man, and I repressed that memory until I was 26. And it was triggered by an event. And so I just want to say, hey, this stuff is real. The other thing I want to say is how everyone keeps saying, why didn't she come forward? She may have come forward. She may have told someone. But this is what happened to me. I told, and it was swept under the rug. And the military was involved. I was a military child. My parents were military. And they swept the entire thing under the rug. Everything was swept under the rug. And it was never talked about again. And so I went through life, my whole teenage years, everything, all the way up to young adulthood, not even knowing what was wrong with me. I knew there was something wrong with me, but I didn't know what it was. And so, yeah, you know what? That lady may have told somebody. And then somebody said, well, we're just going to cover this up, sweep it under the rug. Happens all the time. Thank you for your show. I listen every day.
Listen to the show today, as I do every day. I love you, Rob. But my comment is this, for the record, I was raped 40-plus years ago and did report it at the time. What ensued was difficult at best, and the end result was no conviction. But one moves on. And just to say that to this day, there are certain signals, smells, sights that can directly transport me back to that time. And it's something that you never forget. And I just don't believe that this will be a fair hearing. And certainly after listening to our president at his press conference, I think he's unhinged. I love what you do, Rob. Keep it up. Thank you for all your work.
Daryl in St. Petersburg. This is on Kavanaugh. I called Senator Grassley's office, Hatch's office, et cetera, some of the other senators, and I asked some questions. I says, if this is fair hearings, why have you held back nearly 90% of his documents? What are you afraid of in showing his complete history? Well, we do have some of those documents in spite of them not presenting it in the hearings. But in Congress hearings in 2004, 2006 under oath, he lied. I mean, that's perjury. Isn't that a criminal offense? I mean, Hatch, for example, asked a direct question, and we have the documents that show that he lied. That's perjury. So this is a man you're going to put on the Supreme Court, the highest laws of the land that they're supposed to be overseeing, and he commits perjury to Congress. Those are the kind of questions I think people need to be focused on. Yes, this sexual thing is a problem and so on. But these are things that are actually proven committed offenses.
Once again, and all too often, people are talking about the Kavanaugh case, and they're injecting their personal opinion and their political parties. Democrats are, of course, they're going to be opposed to this left against right same old, same old, and never an acknowledgement of the establishment. It's all about the establishment here. The establishment cannot have Kavanaugh. It's not a Democrat against Republican, and there's maybe the psychological term for this is cognitive dissonance. You can tell somebody this, they're not going to listen, they're not going to accept it. There's brainwashing by the television set. They need to turn off the TV and find out what real truth is and go to the Internet while we still have an uncensored Internet. Mockingbird Media, everybody should research the Mockingbird. It's a government program to use the television set to sway the public to establishment thinking. That's what it's all about, folks. Everybody search engine it.
This is Ed in St. Pete. Although I have some concern of a man's career being damaged by an unproven allegation, no one is guaranteed a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. If there's any question of his character, that suspicion is enough for us to choose another person. Are there no conservative justice nominees who are not tainted by accusations of sexual assault? Move on to someone without that baggage. We need to have confidence in their honesty and character, even if we disagree with their opinions.
Well, there you have some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Today, even a year after Hurricane Maria hit the island of Puerto Rico, the island has not fully recovered. The pace of recovery is a problem for citizens of Puerto Rico, and it could have an impact on the elections here in Florida in November. We're joined now by Charlie Rodriguez Colon, one of the current shadow congressmen appointed by Puerto Rico to represent the island in the U.S. House of Representatives. Charlie is the author and godfather of the Tennessee Plan that's now adopted by Puerto Rico as the path to become the 51st state of the U.S., the same way Tennessee and California did. Charlie has also been a past Senate president of Puerto Rico as well, and he's here to encourage Puerto Ricans who may have come here because of the hurricane to register and vote. And Charlie Rodriguez Colon, welcome to WMNF. Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here in Florida. You know, Florida and Puerto Rico have this connection because it was the first governor of Puerto Rico who discovered, quote unquote, Florida and named it Florida. So here I am coming back to Florida, and it's a pleasure to be here, as well as many Puerto Ricans who have made Florida their home right now after what happened in the hurricane. And before that, many Puerto Ricans have moved into Florida, and obviously I want to help get them registered to vote and have them active participating because they are U.S. citizens by birth. Many people don't know that. I think now after Maria, maybe a lot of people have realized that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens by birth. However, we are second-class citizens because we don't have all the political rights as a U.S. citizen while we remain living in the island. That's why I call it geographic discrimination, because if I'm in the island, I cannot vote for the president, vice president, nor can I elect senators or congresspersons with voting rights in Congress. So if I want to do that, I have to move to one of the 50 states. And as soon as I move, and I obviously comply with the residence requirements of each state, I can register and vote. I can even run for office. But I can't do that in Puerto Rico. And that's what we call it, geographic discrimination.
Okay, we're going to get into that because I want to find out the history. I think that's all really important and relevant. I wanted to ask you first, though, about how's the recovery on the island?
Well, things have improved, at least now. All the households and businesses have electricity. Many people were for 11 months without electricity. My personal experience was that we were 5 months without electricity where we lived. So it was really tough. The grid was already weak before the hurricane
Why was it weak?
Well, in Puerto Rico, the electric company is owned by the government. And we're trying to get rid of it, privatize it. Because the truth is that government is not very good in managing these kind of public corporations and utility corporations. And it wasn't pretty good. And we also were really much in debt. And they had filed for bankruptcy through a law that was approved by Congress, a PROMESA law. And things were difficult. So when the hurricane hit, obviously, it devastated the island. This was a terrible hurricane. And bear in mind, we were struck by two hurricanes. First, Irma, and then Maria. And Maria just crossed the island from one end to the other. It was a Category 4, almost 5 hurricane. And it was very slow. So when it entered Puerto Rico, it remained there for about 6 to 7 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine 6 to 7 hours with winds going over 150 miles per hour? I mean, it was terrible. I've lived in Puerto Rico almost all my life, and I had never experienced something so bad as that. And once we had that pass by without electricity, without running water, because then many of the water plants use electricity. They weren't ready to deal with the situation. Then we had hospitals that did not have electricity. Many roads were closed. We had bridges that had fallen. We had floods afterwards. The worst thing were the floods. And all that obviously brought a standstill to the island. We had no communications. Basically, cellular towers were down. It was terrible. And now things have improved a lot, but we still have to deal with other parts of the recovery of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And we're still struggling with FEMA and with other federal agencies, because although funds have been approved for Puerto Rico, there's too much bureaucracy, and they have put some requisites or requirements for Puerto Rico to use that funds that they did not apply to the states who suffered similar disasters.
So like, Houston doesn't have the same rules as because Houston was hit the same year.
Right. What they have is that FEMA, which is the federal agency that deals with these disasters, FEMA has not put so many bureaucratic hurdles for Texas or for Florida or for the Carolinas that were hit now by Florence. But in the case of Puerto Rico, they have. And for me, this boils down to the bottom line is the status question. I mean, because Florida, the Carolinas, Texas, they can vote for the president. They have two senators. They have Congress people who can, you know, speak on behalf and pressure and bring changes, whereas we in Puerto Rico do not. So we are the last in the line when it comes to giving us support. And it's been unfortunate because, you know, in Puerto Rico, you have 3.4 million American citizens. I mean, you got more Americans living in Puerto Rico than in 21 states of the Union.
We're talking with Charlie Rodriguez Colon, who is one of the current shadow congressmen appointed by Puerto Rico to represent the island in the U.S. House of Representatives. This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you've got a question for Mr. Colon, you can call us up at 813-239-9663, or email address dj@wmnf.org. The death toll. The study that came out last month said that the death toll was 3,000. It didn't happen all during the week of the hurricane or during the day of the hurricane, but in the weeks and months following, 3,000 unnecessary deaths because of the hurricane. President Trump says that, and you're a Democrat, President Trump says that you're trying to embarrass him. What do you say?
Well, actually, those are unfortunate statement from our president. And I say president because obviously he is the president of the United States. He is the president of Puerto Rico in that sense also. And it's unfortunate because the truth is that whenever a hurricane hits land, it does cause disaster initially, but the scope of it, you don't know it until many weeks after, sometimes many months after. The case of Katrina in New Orleans. Obviously, at the beginning, we had information about some people who had died because of the levees and the floods. But then it aggravated because people without electricity, people without running water, people without health services, people who were isolated because they couldn't move around. A lot of people could not get health services. So a lot of people died. So you got over 2,000 people died in Katrina. And in Puerto Rico, it came out to 2,975 people. And this was done by a study that was commissioned to the George Washington University to study all the statistics. At the beginning, we only had the first day or two, we only had 16 persons who died related to the hurricane directly. Then it came up to 64. But it was afterwards that it kept on increasing because people could not have, those who were in dialysis, their machines could not work mm-hmm. because there was no electricity. And although generators started to come down to the island, it was too slow, the distribution of it, because many roads had been obviously with obstacles and you had mudslides and so forth. So it was very difficult. So it increased. So I feel so bad when I hear the president trying to not give credit to this report, because I think he's very insensitive. I mean, we're talking about people. We're talking about lives, And as it happened in Katrina, we only knew about the amount of deaths some months after. That's the same case in Puerto Rico. And right now, FEMA has said that the Hurricane Maria and the aftermath of it is the worst disaster in the history of the United States because it's where more people died direct and indirectly because of the hurricane.
I'm told that when you fly into San Juan these days, you fly over and you can see the houses below and there are tarps still covering many of the blue tarps.
Yes.
Yeah, you still see that as you fly
in. We have them after more than a year because it was on September 20th. So more than a year, you still have that. And as I say, FEMA and other federal agencies have been too slow. And just to give you an example also, when Katrina, which was devastating for New Orleans, the federal government decided to waive the requirement of having to match funds locally with federal funds to deal with the disaster. And it was granted 100% of the federal funds for it. But in Puerto Rico, they don't want to do that. Although the disaster, recognized by FEMA, it's worse than what happened in New Orleans, but they don't want to give us the 100% waiver.
So you have to come up with some local sources of money?
Right. And the thing is that we have a difficult economic situation in Puerto Rico.
The economy's got to be
devastated. Right.
How has tourism been impacted?
Well, it's coming back, but still many hotels haven't been able to open. They're still doing repairs. Major hotels like the Ritz-Carlton, like other hotels, which are huge resorts, haven't been able to open yet. They're still doing, first of all, you got to deal with the insurance companies, and then you got to deal with the reconstruction, and then you got to deal with not having enough supplies coming into the island because of, the situation that we went through. So it's been kind of slow, but we're getting there. Tourism is starting to go up again, especially the cruise ships that are coming into the San Juan and other ports in Puerto Rico. So we're getting there. But what really annoys me is that we're not being treated equally. I don't want better treatment. I don't want worse treatment. I just want equal treatment. And we're not being treated equal, although we are U.S. citizens. And as I said, there are more U.S. citizens living in Puerto Rico than in 21 states. However, we don't have the same attention that we should have. And I go back to the political issue. I mean, if you can't vote, if you don't have political rights, it's so difficult in a democracy to be able to have your voice heard and act upon it. And that's what we're having in Puerto Rico. That's why the statehood movement has increased so much in the last years in Puerto Rico.
We're talking with Charlie Rodriguez Colon. He is one of the shadow members of Congress that represents Puerto Rico in the House of Representatives. And Charlie is going to be speaking this Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Hispanic Heritage Month event, the celebration at Al Lopez Park. This is at the Cordelia Hunt Center at Al Lopez Park, right there by the stadium on Del Mabry and Martin Luther King. And he'll be speaking from 1 to 4 o'clock. Charlie, let's get into why do people in Puerto Rico not have the right to vote for a member of Congress and a president? It's because you're not a state. What is Puerto Rico considered?
Well, Puerto Rico has been, for 121 years, a U.S. territory. We became part of the U.S. as a territory in 1898 after the Spanish-American War, that actually the troops were assembled here in Tampa before they went to Cuba and eventually to Puerto Rico. And in the case of Cuba, Cuba was eventually granted independence. But in the case of Puerto Rico, they decided to remain, to have it as a territory, as well as the Philippines, that were also part of the Spanish-American War that became part of the territory of the U.S., but they were also granted independence. And the only other territory that was acquired in the Spanish-American War that remains a territory is not only Puerto Rico, it's also the island of Guam. Mm-hmm. But Puerto Rico is the one that has, you know, a huge population, 3.4 million. And we are U.S. citizens since 1917, so it's around 101 years of being full-fledged, well, not full-fledged, but at least U.S. citizens. And I correct, not full-fledged, because although we are U.S. citizens, we are denied the right to vote for the president. And since 1917, Puerto Ricans have served proudly in the U.S. Armed Forces. We have been in World War I, World War II, Vietnam, Korea, and all the other conflicts, even the war against terrorism that's taking place now. We have over 200,000 U.S. veterans in Puerto Rico. We have right now active in the U.S. Armed Forces around 25,000 men and women from Puerto Rico. And 9 Puerto Ricans have been recipients of the Medal of Honor for their valor in different wars and battles. So we have shed blood for this country. We have fought for this country. We are U.S. citizens. However, since we are a U.S. territory, we cannot vote for the president. And also, we've been subject to famous Supreme Court decisions that are called the insular cases that were decided at the beginning of the last century, where the Supreme Court of the United States, in a sort of racial tone, made some distinctions regarding Puerto Rico and the other territories and said, oh, you're not incorporated territories. You are unincorporated territories. However, Rob, if you go to the U.S. Constitution, nowhere does it talk about incorporated territories or unincorporated territories. It talks about territories, and it says that Congress will determine, obviously, the rules and regulations for the territories and also the admission of new states. But in the case of Puerto Rico, the Supreme Court came with that distinction, and that distinction was terrible because then it said, well, although the U.S. Constitution would apply to Puerto Rico, and although they are U.S. citizens, since they're not an incorporated territory, then you won't have the full-fledged rights as a U.S. citizen, and well, you know, we got to wait until what happens in the island. Well, the truth is that for many years, people in Puerto Rico, I say, were the happy colonials. They enjoyed being a territory and a colony. It was called Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, still called Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, but that's just a nice word saying a territory or a colony. And right now, people realize that if you're a U.S. citizen and you don't have political rights, hey, it's like you don't have anything.
Give us some other examples where you think Puerto Rico is treated like a second-class place. You said that it has to jump through more hurdles in order to get hurricane relief, for instance, and the U.S. has imposed, FEMA has imposed more rules on you mm-hmm. recovering from the hurricane. But what are some of the other ways in which you're disadvantaged by not having a vote two U.S. senators and a vote in the House of Representatives?
You're right. What the Supreme Court said and recently ratified in a famous case in 2016 was that Congress could discriminate with Puerto Rico in terms of federal programs. We don't receive the same amount of benefits as we would receive if we were considered a part of the U.S. To give you an instance, the Tax Policy Center came out with a report saying that 44% of the people who live in the U.S., in the 50 states, do not pay federal taxes because they don't earn enough or whatever reason there may be. 44%. However, they are entitled to 100% of all the benefits, programs, and rights as a U.S. citizen. In the case of Puerto Rico, many people in Puerto Rico do pay federal income tax on income derived from outside sources of the island, but we do pay payroll taxes. We pay Social Security and we pay Medicare. However, we don't receive the same benefits as other U.S. citizens may receive. So there you see that sort of discrimination. Give you another instance, and this is more on the private sector. A lot of private companies treat Puerto Rico as it was a international destination or foreign country, whereas all federal laws apply in Puerto Rico. Because Congress has extended most of those laws of Puerto Rico. Yes, it may, when it's programs, entitlements, it could establish a different amount of money for Puerto Rico, which usually is less than you would receive if you lived in the mainland. But yes, federal laws are extended to Puerto Rico. You know, you don't need a passport to go to Puerto Rico. You know, we got federal court system. You know, we have a U.S. Postal Service. We have immigration, the U.S. immigration, U.S. custom. It is like any other state. The only thing is that in Puerto Rico, similar to Miami and probably some parts of Tampa and Orlando, we do it more in Spanish than in English. But the truth is that Puerto Rico gets discriminated constantly. And what we're saying is this. We in Puerto Rico have realized that we cannot remain being second-class U.S. citizens. That the only way we can achieve equality is by making Puerto Rico the 51st state. That is why in two plebiscites, one held in 2012 and one held in 2017, the people in Puerto Rico have voted in favor of statehood. Now, before, as I said, they used to be the happy colonials. They enjoy being a territory. But people have realized now that there's no honor, there's no dignity, there's no rights in remaining a territory. So we want to change, and that's part of the things we're trying to do in Congress. Their bill has been introduced in Congress. To admit Puerto Rico as a state. We have around 57 sponsors in the House, Democrats and Republicans, but we're still not there. And obviously, you know, session ends right now and we'll have to start again in January, but we're going to be there. When you're fighting for your rights, hey, you got to continue and continue and continue. And if you look at the history of our nation, that's the way it's been. You know, first of all, only males could vote, and males who paid taxes. Later, all white males could vote. Later, African Americans could vote. Later, the women were granted voting. Later, we have now, gays have been recognized all their rights. But right now, Puerto Rico is the unfinished business of American democracy. Because Puerto Rico, you got 3.4 million U.S. citizens deprived of equal rights, and that is wrong, and that's what we want to change.
We're talking with Charlie Rodriguez Colon, who will be speaking this Saturday at the Hispanic Heritage Month event at Al Lopez Park in Tampa from 1 to 4 o'clock, and this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. So I understood that maybe if you go back 20 years, there were people that wanted to continue the relationship as a commonwealth, there were people that wanted statehood, and there was there's been a long-time movement for independence, to create a country separate from the U.S. Independence movement, has that completely died out?
Independence Party has not been able to remain as a registered party in Puerto Rico in the last three elections. We have elections every 4 years. And the reason is that they don't get more than 3% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the Commonwealth Party or Status Quo Party has been losing support of the people because, as people, as I said, realize that you need to have equal rights. And what better example that many Puerto Ricans leave the island? They don't go to Cuba, or they don't go to Dominican Republic, or they don't go to Mexico or Venezuela. They come to one of the 50 states because they know that you're better off in a state than in the territory. So there is an acceptance that you can be better as a state. So they realize that, and things have changed. And now we have huge support for statehood, and we're working in Congress to get that approved.
200,000 people, I understand, have come from Puerto Rico to the U.S. since Hurricane Maria. They're here. A lot of them are here in Florida.
Right.
I read the other day, too, that FEMA was saying to some of the people that have come here that FEMA will no longer pay their housing vouchers. So some of these folks face homelessness. But what's the condition of folks who have moved here from Puerto Rico, those 200,000 people?
Well, I would say the majority have already, you know, trying to, they have adjusted. It's been difficult, but they have. Because they had relatives, many had relatives already living here for many, many years. But some have had some difficulties. And those are the ones that I think there are around 1,000 or so that are still, will become homeless when FEMA comes up and tells them you got to move. Obviously, I think it should be extended, or at least local authorities should try to help, and even private non-governmental organizations to try to help to see how we can provide some housing for these people, for them to be able to adjust. It's been difficult. I have to say that in many ways, many local agencies have been helpful. Some state agencies here also have been helpful. But the truth is that, you know, imagine if you have to leave your home because of a natural disaster and go to live to someplace else. And all of a sudden your life has been, you know, totally changed. How do you adopt? How do you deal? So I think government and social services and non-governmental organizations need to help. And the other people in the community, other Puerto Ricans should help. The government of Puerto Rico is trying to do the best it can. But, hey, we have our hands full dealing with the situation locally in the island.
You're the author of the Tennessee Plan that would create voting rights for people in Puerto Rico to vote for a president, vote for a member of Congress, vote for the Senate. Tell us, how would the plan work?
Well, the Tennessee Plan is a strategy that was adopted by the then territory of Tennessee. Tennessee wanted to become a state of the union, and they had voted in favor of statehood. But Congress would just drag their feet and do nothing. So the people in Tennessee said, hey, you know what? We're going to proclaim this Tennessee is a state. We're going to adopt our own state constitution, and we are going to select our two senators and our congressperson, and we're going to send them to the nation's capital. Washington, D.C. did not exist. I think it was Philadelphia that time. And after they did that, 3 months passed by, and they became state. So it was pretty fast. But before, they were trying, and they couldn't make it. So that strategy has been called the Tennessee Plan. Now, six other territories used the same strategy. Michigan, Iowa, Kansas, California. Who would think that California needed to use this in order to become a state? Oregon, and the last one to use the Tennessee Plan strategy was Alaska. So we in Puerto Rico have voted for statehood. Congress keeps on, like, dragging its feet on this. Even the president came out saying that he's against statehood because he has his political feud with the mayor of San Juan, which I can agree in terms that she hasn't been a very good mayor, really, in terms of the services providing to the city. But you cannot, trivialize the situation of 3.4 million U.S. citizens who want to have equality because you have a feud with a political person. And if it were for that, we wouldn't have any State of the Union, because in every State of the Union, you have bad politicians. And some people think that we have one in the White House right now, which I could agree with that. But I'm saying you cannot discard that just because one person is not suitable to what you believe should be a good politician. And as I say, I can agree that she hasn't been a very good mayor. I do have to say that, this is, you can't trivialize the issue. You got to look at it. So we're doing that now. We adopted the Tennessee Plan. That is why, by law, we establish a congressional delegation. If Puerto Rico were a state, because of its population, it would have around five members of Congress and two senators. So it would be seven. And what we did was that we selected three Republicans, three Democrats. I'm one of the Democrats, and one independent. And what we're doing right now is lobbying, because obviously we went to Congress, we went to the clerk's office of the Senate and of the House, and said, "Hey, here we are. This is our credentials that we are the duly representatives of Puerto Rico, our congressional delegation." But they said, "Well, thank you, but, under our rules, you can't sit in the House or in the Senate." And what we're doing now is what the others who implemented the Tennessee Plan did is we lobby and we speak on behalf of the people of Puerto Rico with the authority that we are the official delegation of a territory fighting to become a state of the union.
Who in Congress is in support of statehood for Puerto Rico?
Well, on the Republican side in the House, you have the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee, who is the committee that has jurisdiction over the territories, Ron Bishop. He is supporting the statehood bill for Puerto Rico. And you have Democrat leaders who are also supporting it. You have the Hoyer, Steny Hoyer, who is the minority whip, has endorsed publicly statehood for Puerto Rico. Right now, the bill has 57 co-sponsors. The majority of them are Democrats, but more or less the same amount. It keeps on increasing. And Bill Nelson in the Senate supports State of Puerto Rico. I also have to say that Ron DeSantis, who is a congressman, who's running for governor, he's a congressman, he's also supporting State of Puerto Rico.
And I understand Rick Scott, too, our current governor.
Rick Scott, the governor, is also supporting State of Puerto Rico. And it's interesting, well, that's why I tell the people in Puerto Rico, you know, when you have political rights, you become important. And now you see all politicians here in Florida saying, hey, we support State of Puerto Rico. And the reason they do it, because they know the majority of people of Puerto Rico want statehood, and that those who are in Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans who have moved to Florida, support overwhelmingly State of Puerto Rico. So, hey, this is politically correct for us. And I can understand that. That's politics. Well, hooray. That's what I'm saying. In a democracy, if you don't have the right to vote, you know, you can't influence results. And that's why I think it's important what's going on locally.
Well, speaking of that, tens of thousands of people from Puerto Rico have moved here to Florida, just especially to Central Florida, places like Tampa and Kissimmee and Orlando, Orange County.
Yep.
You know that very well. The newspapers went out and tried to figure out how many of them registered to vote here in Florida in the upcoming November election. They found that only about 9,000 or 10,000 people from Puerto Rico had signed up to vote here. What's your message to people who have moved here from the island?
Well, Rob, that's why I'm here, because I want to help the drive of getting Puerto Ricans to register to vote. Remember, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. Once they comply with the local residence requirements, they can immediately register. They can even run for office. And our message is very clear and simple. Register to vote and turn out to vote. And the governor of Puerto Rico will be next week in Orlando area doing the same thing. Other members of the Senate and of the House and other mayors will also be doing the same thing. The last day to register here is October 9th. And it's so easy to register here, because here you can do it at the office of elections, but you can also do it by mail. You could do it online. You could do it in the when you take out your license,
driver's license. Yeah.
So we're telling them, one of the things we have to deal with, many people from Puerto Rico, is that in Puerto Rico, we only have one election every 4 years. And it's always on the same date as the presidential election here in the mainland. And every 4 years, we elect everything. The governor, the Senate, the House, the mayors, the city council members. So everything is elected the same day. Now here you have so many different elections. Here you even elect judges. Puerto Rico judges are appointed. Here you have the school boards that are elected. Even the appraisal officer, everyone here is elected, even the attorney general. And in Puerto Rico, that's not the case. So they come here, they feel a little bit confused. They said, you know, how is this? So we're also educating them, telling them, listen, you know, this is the way it goes, and you should not fear from this, and you should really register, and you should turn out to vote. So we're getting the message, and probably we'll get enough to do a difference in this midterm election, because here in Florida, as you know, it's kind of a swing state. Elections are kind of close, and the influx of a large number of people voting for the first time, although it may be small, but it could be significant in a very close election. And hopefully for the next cycle, which would be the 2020 presidential, we'll have many, many more. But from here to October 9, we want to have every Puerto Rican to do so, to register and eventually turn out to vote on November 6. So we're going to be doing that. That's one of the reasons I'm here. I'm going to continue coming to Tampa. You know, Hillsborough County, just to give you an idea, Hillsborough County, one out of every four residents is Hispanic or Latino.
Yeah, that's amazing.
One out of every four. And of those who are Latinos, the majority are right now Puerto Ricans. And that is not Orlando. We're talking about Hillsborough County here. So we want to get them to register. We want to be part of it. And I say that, you know, you got to raise issues with them. Many Puerto Ricans are very much disgusted with President Trump, the way he's been so insensitive dealing with Puerto Rico. You know, he went to Puerto Rico, and we were glad he went there for the hurricane. But then he went and started throwing paper towels. That was kind of demeaning. And then he had some remarks that, well, he's done it here against women. He's done it against so many people here. Every time he says something, it's so hostile. Let me tell you, the U.S. has had Democrats and Republicans the presidency. I can't recall anyone being in the White House being so divisive and hostile in his demeanor and his language. And you know, I always saw the president, regardless if you're Democrat or Republican, as a person who would unify the country. You don't see that with President Trump. So people in Puerto Rico are really much upset. So most likely they would probably vote Democratic here. And obviously I'm a Democrat. I'm campaigning for that. And many people here are realizing that although they may be other Republican candidates for other offices that probably aren't as hostile or divisive as Trump, the truth is that electing a Republican to the Senate or to the Congress is basically in support of the Trump policies because that Republican member of Congress will vote accordingly to what the president would want. So many people are saying, hey, maybe it's not a good idea to start splitting the ballot. Let's see if we vote one way only. And the truth is, I think President Trump is hurting Republican candidates, and rightfully so, here in Florida. And in a close election, you know, things can change. And I've been seeing the polls recently, and I've seen that there have been a surge in favor of Bill Nelson, who had been behind the polls, and also Andrew Gillum running for governor. So let's see what happens. We're still got to wait till the election date on November 6th. But in the meantime, as I said, Rob, I think any U.S. citizen, be Puerto Rican or not, any U.S. citizen should register and should vote. The most important thing in democracy is your vote. If you want a voice, turn out to vote. If you don't vote, others will decide for you.
Well, we're talking with Charlie Rodriguez Colon, and he is the chair of the Democratic Party of Puerto Rico. He's here in the Tampa Bay area. He'll be doing some speaking this weekend, and this is WMNF 88.5 FM. If you've got a question for us, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Let's go to Matt, who's in Odessa on the phone. Matt, welcome to the program. What's your question for Mr. Rodriguez Colon?
I was questioning, have you ever thought of modeling yourselves after the Hasidim in Israel, who vote in such an effective block that they can control the government in such a way as it goes contrary to everyone's normal beliefs and really keep it in there almost in a theocracy. And the second thing is, have you ever thought of buying enough puppets in Washington, senators, that you can get things done for you? Because without buying enough puppets, really, you're paralyzed.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot. Thanks for that question.
Well, Matt, in terms of voting blocks, first of all, I believe in democracy. I believe in the right to vote. I don't want to try to tell people necessarily, force them to vote one way or the other. I do want to reason with them. I do want to deliberate with them, talk to them, have a conversation, try to convince them. But eventually, it's up to each person. And if that person, by the way he votes or she votes, becomes a voting block, well, so be it, but not necessarily forcing it. One thing I have to say, and that is that Hispanics, Latinos, in the U.S. are the largest growing block of voters. And to ignore them, be Republican or be Democrat, is a huge political mistake, and they should get on. In terms of puppets, well, you know, I don't think anyone should be bought. I think we have to reason. I know that here in the mainland, there's a lot of lobbying efforts that take place that since the decision of the Supreme Court, private corporations can get involved and give huge amount of monies and have these PACs. And I don't like that, but hey, that's what we have right now. But I wouldn't do that. And I really commend and applaud those candidates who say that they do not accept PAC money, because I think it's a way of saying, listen, we can't be bought and we are going to do things according to what the people want. So that's up to each one. And my case right now is to guarantee that everyone, particularly Puerto Ricans who have moved here, who are U.S. citizens, can register and can vote, because that is their duty. And that is a privilege that they have as U.S. citizens to be able to vote in the elections and elect those who approve laws that affect them daily.
Thanks a lot, Matt, for your phone call. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Antonio in Sarasota. Antonio, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Two things to begin with. I don't like the way the gentleman Fangs explains that you have to be like a citizen to have rights. I believe it says every man is created equal, endowed with unalienable rights. So I don't know about having to be a citizen to have some. And the second thing is about people not being bought to vote. I think then he's coming. Then he wants to be part of the run the democracy, because here money talks and everything else walks. And here's some other things, points about the second class citizenship. If you, I don't know if he remembers the testing they did with the birth control in Puerto Rico. I don't know if he forgot about Vieques. Does he remember those things? Does he remember the testing on Agent Orange in Puerto Rico? And the most recent thing about the commission that was appointed to Puerto Rico, and they're going to tell us how we're going to spend our money and force us back to pay back a crap loan. And this gentleman is talking about that he wants to be a state because it's going to benefit us. I don't think the U.S. has benefited Puerto Rican people since the get-go. And I want him to, you know, emphasize on that. How are we going to benefit? Because just taking part in a presidential election that doesn't really go anywhere anyhow, I don't think it's going to benefit the Puerto Rican people at all.
All right, Antonio, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments. All right, three issues of Vieques, a big issue, birth control. Let's talk about those.
Well, the truth is that Vieques and also Culebra were two islands that the Navy, for many years, used it as an area to practice bombs and different military exercises. And I was part of the commission appointed by then Governor Pedro Rosselló that dealt with that situation and eventually had the Navy close the use of those facilities.
Because civilians were being affected by
right.
the bombing.
Actually,
yeah.
One civilian died in one of those bombings. And obviously that was dealt with. It was a kind of difficult at that time. And I say, had we had political rights, we could influence and bring changes. But we did it using public opinion, not only in Puerto Rico, but elsewhere. And I think people realized that could not continue. In terms of the experiments, yes, it's true. Experiments were done in Puerto Rico in the 60s, 50s, and 60s on birth control. That was a terrible thing. And obviously, it's been condemned by everyone. And unfortunately, that's not taking place anymore, but it's terrible. And those experiments had happened here in the mainland. I mean, remember, African-Americans were also part of experiments, and that's terrible.
Yeah, Tuskegee experiments.
Right,
yeah.
And that is terrible. And obviously, I cannot applaud that and be in favor of that. In terms of, he said that having political rights, if here money talks and so forth, well, the truth is, I think that we have to bring a change. And the only change is by people voting, turning out to vote. There's no doubt that if people turn out to vote, those who think like he does or other people, you know, you can make a difference.
Antonio was complaining about the new austerity program.
Oh,
I
yeah.
understand that schools have closed down, that Puerto Rico has to repay a lot of its debt.
Yeah.
Is that a good, I mean, would political rights change that and make
Oh, definitely. You know, PROMESA was approved by Congress. And what it does is establish a supervisory fiscal board that really adopts and gets involved in issues that should be managed by the elective government of Puerto Rico, the local government. But since we are a territory, Congress has the constitutional power to do what it did. So it approved this PROMESA law. And it is terrible, and we have fought against it. We never were in favor of it. If Puerto Rico were a state, Congress could never do that to a state. You can never approve a law of that nature with any state. You can do it with some cities, but you need to have the approval of the state legislature, because in the federal system of government, you have two sovereigns. You have the federal national sovereign, and you have the state sovereigns. And obviously, if you're a state, they cannot do that. But Puerto Rico is not a state. So it's a territory, so they could do it. And it's been questioned and it's been raised in courts. And courts have said, listen, the U.S. Congress has the authority to do with Puerto Rico whatever it wants because it's a territory.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, PROMESA has been terrible. We're fighting against PROMESA. PROMESA now wants to get into the details of how you spend your local budget. And it's causing a lot of problems. In terms of schools, yes, we've had some problems in terms of budget, but also we have another situation. In Puerto Rico, population has decreased substantially. So obviously you have a lot of schools that they are not needed in terms of, and some of them are really old schools, and that's why they've started closing some schools. I know it's a big debate. Everyone wants to have a school near
a neighborhood
your,
school.
Right.
Yeah.
But the truth is that since the amount of students have decreased substantially, there's, in terms of fiscal budget issue, it's not sustainable. So changes have been taking place, and sometimes it is not easy. But these changes started even before the current administration took hold in Puerto Rico. So it's something that we have to deal with, because obviously it would happen here also. If here in Florida you have a decrease in amount of students in a school, you have to determine whether or not, but in terms of budget, it's, you know, you can keep on working with that school. Or if you will just close that school and consolidate with another school. And I know it's a difficult situation, but it's something that we have to deal with, because there is a reality. We have less money available to deal with schools. And at the same time, we got this supervisory board appointed by Congress, which is doing a lot of things difficult for the local government. And then you have a lot of kids who have moved to the mainland, and you don't have that much. That much students in our system right now, in our public system.
We're talking about one of Florida's nearest neighbors, Puerto Rico, the island Commonwealth, and our guest is Charlie Rodriguez Colon. This is WMNF in Tampa. Charlie is the chair of the Democratic Party in Florida, and he'll be speaking at
Puerto Rico.
I'm sorry, I gave you an upgrade there, but maybe one day you'll be the chair of the Democratic Party in Florida if you ever move here. Charlie will be speaking at Al Lopez Park this Saturday at 1 o'clock, and we're going to go to Karen in Safety Harbor. Karen, what's your question?
Yes, hi, this is Karen Owen. I'm with the League of Women Voters of North Pinellas. Thank you so much for this program. I just want to remind the listeners who do live in Pinellas County to go to votepinellas.com. They can check their voter registration. They can learn where to vote. They can make sure if they have changed their address that their voter information is also updated. Very, very important. And I also want to remind them that about 60% of the voters vote by mail, and that's also possible. Very important. Deadline October 8th, as Mr. Rodriguez Colon mentioned. And then my question is, where is a good place for us to set up voter registration drives where Puerto Ricans might be?
Well, Rob, can I?
Yeah, please
okay.
do.
Well, the first thing I think would be if you can make it for the event we have this Sunday at the park. I know many Puerto Ricans will be there. Many Latinos will be there who probably are U.S. citizens and can be able to vote. But I think one of the things I'm trying to do here is see if I can organize and talk with different religious leaders of the Puerto Rican and Hispanic community and other business leaders to see if they can help us in terms of being able to talk to the people and to different events where we can have a drive for them to register. Obviously, participating in programs like this and other media, we're trying to get the word out and have Puerto Ricans become aware that they can register if they have not registered yet, and that they can turn out to vote. But you're right, probably the best way to do that would be with different Latin Hispanic churches here in Florida and in the Hillsborough County. And also in malls. It always works in malls, especially malls that many Puerto Ricans, Hispanic go there and do their shopping and so forth. That would be my recommendation right now. And the other thing, we go to the media, but you need money to do that, to place advertisement. But that's part of what I'm doing, and I'm trying to talk to many people and see if we can get them involved.
Karen, thank you so much. Thanks for your call. We're almost at the end of the show. Charlie, thanks for spending all this time with us. It's great to hear what's going on in Puerto Rico and also the ideas for more rights for the people of Puerto Rico. If people want to find out more, is there a website for the Democratic Party in Puerto Rico?
Right now, basically information regarding the struggle for statehood is through the Statehood Commission of Puerto Rico, and you can go there by www.statehood4puertorico.com, and there you can get a lot of information concerning Puerto Rico, and then you can also go to the website of the government of Puerto Rico, where some information regarding this is also posted.
Thank you so much, Charlie Rodriguez Colon. Thank you very much. And he'll be speaking at Al Lopez Park this Saturday at 1 o'clock. By the way, we're carrying the hearings, the Ford-Kavanaugh hearings, on our HD3 channel right now. Coming up in the next hour, you'll hear a discussion about the legal ramifications of sexual attack, an in-depth discussion. Stay tuned on the Midpoint program. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa-St. Petersburg. Here's the latest news.